I'm Greta Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Guthrie Theater, presenting Moss Hart and George Kaufman's comedy Once in a Lifetime, June 3rd through July 1st only. Tickets available at 612-377-2224.
It's 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ikton. Glad you could join us. Looks like Minnesota legislators will miss the governor's target date. Governor Jesse Ventura has said he hoped to call a one-day special legislative session tomorrow so that legislators could pass all the bills that didn't pass during the regular legislative session that ended last month. But last we heard, legislators were still far apart on fundamental tax issues, and House Speaker Steve Swigum said yesterday there's no way that legislators will be able to meet the governor's deadline. Meetings continue at the Capitol today. Some legislators, however, have finished their work. Last week, members of the House Senate Conference Committee on Higher Education agreed on a bill that provides substantially more money for higher education than the governor requested, but substantially less money than the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State Colleges and University System requested. It's a bill that legislators say should meet the school's basic needs, but which educators say will lead to double-digit tuition increases in Minnesota and could result in a broader reassessment of higher education in the state of Minnesota. Well, joining us today to discuss what's in that bill are the chairs of the House and Senate Higher Education Committees, Republican State Representative Peggy Lepick from Golden Valley, and DFL State Senator Deanna Weiner from Eagan. As always, we invite you to join our conversation if you have a question or comment about the higher education bill that apparently is on the verge of becoming law. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Senator Weiner, Representative Lepick, thanks for coming in today.
Delighted to be here.
I suppose the first obvious question is, why were you folks able to get your work done? You were done already last week, and all these other conference committees, gosh, they're a long way from the finish line. What magic elixir did you have?
I think it's just the combo.
It could be. We have done a lot of work before the end of the session. And really all we needed to do by the time the session adjourned was to plug in the dollars. Once we got that, it was actually fairly easy. We had a few more hours of meetings. There was no doubt about that. Some of them were just Deanna and myself, and some of them were in what we called the working group. But I think we had a pretty good idea of where we were going. And even before we got the number, we had a pretty close idea of what it was going to be. So we had already worked out a lot of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Even though the numbers aren't what the Senate that we had in our bill when we went forward, there was an earlier rumor out there looming that the number was going to be far less than what the House had in their target. And Peggy and I met about that number and we said, no way. If this is what we're going to get handed to us, we're not going to accept that. So we've been on the same page pretty much through this. It's higher ed is a value that we all care about, and we made our bill happen, and we're, I think, for the most part, pretty pleased.
Now, is it possible if Senate DFLers prevail in these seemingly endless negotiations over the tax bill, if they prevail in their effort to link the a statewide business tax to education funding, is it possible that you'd actually end up with more money in your bill and you'd have to go back and figure out how to spend it?
I would think that's a fairly remote possibility, actually, but if they insist on giving us money, we'll take it. I do think that higher education could have used more money than we were given in our target. So if we do wind up with more, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. We'll work with it.
I think we're reaping the benefit of our good economy in Minnesota based on the good workforce that we've had, a good educated workforce. If we want to continue on this path for our future, the commitment, I believe, should be to higher ed, and it should be bipartisan, and it is. And the more dollars we can have to put into our systems to have good financial aid packages available for people who need them, we certainly could put the money to good use.
As the bill now stands, though, it only contains about half of the new money that the higher education systems had requested. Is there enough money in the bill to make sure that students in Minnesota get a high-quality education?
Yes, I think there is. I think the issue is how much more will the Minsky system and the university be able to do that they had wanted to do, and that is a big issue.
Mm-hmm. When you come in, when we looked at the request from the university and Minsky, their health care costs plus the 3% salary increases really were the budget breakers. I mean, that's not accounting then for any new dollars on the table to allow them to be ready and plan for their future and where they want to put their focuses to. So it, that part is a little disconcerting in the costs of doing the higher ed business. And so if we could get more dollars, it would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat separate from the basic requests, both for the University of Minnesota and the higher education, or the Minnesota State Colleges and University System, from their basic requests was a special issue of what to do about the University of Minnesota Academic Health Center, which includes the medical school. Now, there is more money for the Academic Health Center in your bill, correct? In fact, long-term funding.
That's right. The $176 million was from the general fund, and it did not fund the Academic Health Center. There was an endowment created within, or an account created within an existing endowment, which will bring in $343 million of new money that will be coming paid from the tobacco settlement. Mm-hmm. That will go towards the Academic Health Center. The interest on that in the first year of the biennium should produce about $5 million. By the end of the biennium, they should have $19 million, and in the next biennium, that will increase to $34 million. So we expect that with that money, even though it starts off a little bit slower than the university would like, probably, it should give them good resources to stabilize the Academic Health Center, the medical school in particular, and to expand some very important programs such as rural dentistry, rural nursing, pharmacy, medical technicians, where we know we have very big shortages, workforce shortages here in Minnesota. That will allow them to expand those programs and meet the needs there.
Will there be enough money in that fund to allow the university medical school to return to its old glory days?
I spoke to President Udoff yesterday, and he believes with this amount of commitment that we should be able to put the medical school back on the map.
Okay. And one other question before we get to some listener calls here. The issue of tuition. Both the university and Minsky say that the bill, though they're grateful that it's got as much money in it as it does, is still going to result in double-digit tuition increases at both, at all the schools, 11 to 12% at the university, 10% at the Minsky. Are we getting to the point now where tuition has gotten so high that we're pricing some Minnesota students out of college?
Well, I hope not. And I should say that the 10% at Minsky is an average across their system. There are some that will be significantly less than that. There are some that will be higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Raising tuition is a real problem, and part of the problem is that our financial aid program doesn't cover all of the increase. There is what's called a family share and a student share, and they are responsible for covering that. And for many of those students, that will either mean working more or taking out larger loans. And the loan debt can be very significant for some students, and that is a great concern for us.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said you get what you pay for. If we would have had the Senate provision and we would have prevailed with more dollars like we had come in with, I think we could have kept our tuition at a minimum. But if we don't want to sacrifice quality, we want to remain having good access for our universities and colleges, and affordability, it costs money to make that happen. So with this bill, I know quality is not going to decline. That's a commitment from the chancellor and the president of the university. The access will still have the availability, but the affordability is now in question. And when you have a double-digit increase in tuition, that part does concern me.
So you can get in if you can afford to get in.
Right. And if you are eligible, you'll get a financial aid package. But there's some people that are on the edge. They may not be, they're just right on the edge not to get the financial aid. They'll have to get the loans, and that's what my fear is.
Mm-hmm. That was State Senator Deanna Weiner from Eagan, a DFLer, and Republican State Representative Peggy Lepick from Golden Valley is with us as well, chairs of the Senate and House Higher Education Committees, and they have, unlike other legislators, actually have worked out an agreement on the higher education bill. They have finished their work, now waiting for a special session to be called to put the final imprimatur on a new higher education bill in the state of Minnesota. Great opportunity for those of you listening to find out more about what's in that bill and what the future may hold for higher education. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here. 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free. That number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Beth, you're first. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Gary. To hear President Udoff of the U talk about education funding, it sounds as though we're not the only state that is struggling to put more money into education. But I think that's really sad and really short-sighted. First of all, I just want to thank you. Thank your guests for doing all they can to put more money into education. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin over 20 years ago, and tuition then was dirt cheap. I went back for some refresher courses to one of the technical schools here as a Minnesota resident about 3 years ago. The price per credit was $42 because it was part of it, the total cost was subsidized by the state at that time. There were people in my classes that were struggling to speak English and that were recent immigrants and people that didn't have a lot of money, who were working very hard in these classes, and I don't see how by raising the tuition, people like that are going to be able to, who really want to contribute to our state economy, are going to be able to go back to school. Right now, this summer, tuition is $82 a credit. I tried to pay for another course for the fall, and I can't yet because we don't know what they said. They don't know what the cost per credit will be. Consider the fact that in New York City, NYU was free to immigrants years ago when they came to this country, and California still tries to keep tuition costs down. And I think that's the driving force of our economy. And I realize your guests think so, too. I just am exercised over this because it's always been a priority of mine. And thanks for letting me talk.
All right. Thanks, Beth. Representative Lepick?
Beth, I agree with you. It is very difficult, and costs of higher education have skyrocketed in the last 15 years ago. I think the reason, particularly when we look at the percentage of the state budget that higher education consumes, it has gone down. And the reason for that, I think, is not so much a lack of interest in higher education, but the fact that there are other things that have come to the fore as priorities for Minnesotans and for people in other states, too. And we look at health care. 15 years ago, it was simply not that high an issue for most people, and the state was not that much involved. Now, health care costs are enormous, and we put a lot of money into that in the state budget. And at the same time as that goes up, we see funding for higher education go down. I know I originally came from California, excuse me, and when I was there, going to the University of California was free. And I think many other states also had free tuition. But I think those days are long gone, and our best hope is to try to keep them down. I think that President Udoff has raised a very important issue when he spoke to the Board of Regents a few weeks ago about the need for Minnesotans to reassess what higher education means to us and what the university means to us, what place it has, and whether tuition should go up in order to have a first-rate university or whether it is more important for us to keep tuition down and possibly have to cut back in some areas, certainly have to cut back in some areas and not be a top-ranked university in many of the fields that we would like to be.
Mm-hmm. Senator Weiner, where would you come down on that choice?
Well, that comes down to the question of access. And the university and Minsky are constantly reallocating and proving to both the Senate and the House higher ed committees the areas that they have made cuts. Those are tough choices, but we can't be everything to everyone, and you do get what you pay for. So if we do focus, and we're expecting both Minsky and the university to focus, what are our strengths, what are the workforce needs? I know the university has outlined 5 program areas that they are going to put an emphasis on, and that's where they see the state's economy evolving around, and that's important. And so for that matter, I commend both the university and Minsky for doing that. But Beth raises a good question about, are we now going to be leaving some people in the dust because they can't afford it? And hopefully with the $36 million that we've added to the financial aid program, that there'll still be avenues for people that are on that tight of a budget.
I do think that particularly the Minsky system is still really quite a bargain. The technical colleges are very accessible. But in fact, I think the expansion of the Minsky system has been one of the reasons why we find tuition rising at the university and why it is very costly for the state to maintain the system that we have. 30, 40, 50 years ago, the university was virtually the only game in town. There were a few other state universities. There were some community colleges. But we didn't have the really extensive system that we have now. And it costs money to maintain all of those campuses. There has been an effort to try to pull back a bit on them, but the local pressures to keep campuses open are enormous. And I think it's going to be very difficult for us to retrench on the total size of our higher education system. We define access both financially and geographically, and there was a time in Minnesota when we defined access and we had the goal of having a campus within, I believe it was 35 miles of virtually every resident in the state. We have come very close to accomplishing that, but it has been at a huge cost, and probably the campus to feel that cost the most has been the University of Minnesota here at the Twin Cities, because when the university was the only game in town, that's where the money went, and now it's spread out all over the place.
Just as we have moved away from what amounted to free education, higher education in Minnesota, or so low cost that it essentially was free, is it time then to move away from that idea that you need a college within 35 miles of your home?
I think that Minsky is looking at that, and they have made those attempts. They've done a lot of consolidations of campuses, still having some campuses that are remaining, but they consolidate their administration into maybe 4 or 5 campuses working together. And I think with this bill, the question of access will come to play for Minsky.
Yeah.
Can they continue to deliver all the areas that they want to, the programs they want to deliver to all the campuses? One thing that they have done is trim back on the program access. We don't need to have an auto mechanic class at every one of the tech colleges. You may have to drive 100 miles if you want to go to a program. You may have to eliminate a program if it's no longer viable. Just because you've got a professor or faculty there doesn't mean that build it and they'll come or keep it and they'll come. That's not necessarily the way anymore. So they've been making those changes, and I think they'll be forced to make continued changes with this bill, and if the bills like this come out in the future.
Will legislators support higher education officials in the state if they make some high-profile changes? If, for example, they suggest a campus be closed? In the past, there's been quite an uproar when that came up. Or the University of Minnesota, when they closed the Waseca campus, huge fight over that. Or when they suggested a few years ago that, well, maybe we should close down, it was the General College at that time. Well, big squabble over that. And it seemed like the educators were being told, well, get out there and save some money, consolidate. And then when they marched out on the limb, you could hear the buzzsaw starting behind them. Is that still the case?
It certainly is. The university was able to close Waseca for a couple of different reasons. One is they are constitutionally autonomous. They could make that decision, and the legislature would have a very difficult time undoing it or preventing it. There are political reasons as well, and perhaps it's rather crass, but it depends on who represents the district as to how much effort is going to be made to save a particular campus. We saw that happen just a year ago when the Minsky system, Board of Trustees, recommended closure of the Anoka-Hennepin Community College, or Technical College, excuse me. And because I frankly to believe it was because of the political landscape at that time that it did not happen. And I think it's those same issues are going to be raised every time either the university or Minsky make the recommendation to close a campus. I don't think the university is going to at this point, but Minsky may well want to in the future because that's the system that has many still very tiny campuses out there, and they may decide at some point that they're just not viable. But every time they make that recommendation, there's a political uproar. There's the local constituency, because every town wants to have a campus.
It's like a high school.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say a campus is like a high school, but it's like if you're going to close down something that's
right.
so valuable to that small community, it's tearing the heart out of that community. And that's what it's become, where we need to look at where they can take that opportunity and make those decisions. That should not be in the legislature's purview. We have trustees for a reason to make those decisions. But Peggy's right. They do all of a sudden come in, all of a sudden politics enter in. It's somebody's hometown or district that they represent. And all of a sudden, we've got to put more money into this. We've got to make this stay open. So I think we need to stay out of it and let Minsky do what they know to do best. And they're starting down that path with a good allocation model that will represent fairness through all the campuses and force some good issues to be discussed.
Joe, your comment, please.
Yeah, I went to the University of Minnesota during the early 1980s, and funding wasn't indeed tight. Then they talked about tuitions being high and whatnot, and I worked my way through. And it was something that I felt was valuable, and I think I learned a good work ethic because of it. And I think somewhat we're sending the wrong message to the young people who are out there now, stating that, you know, you get something for free. There's very few things in this world that are for free. I think it's a better message to tell them that if you work hard for something, you can achieve goals. And I just think we're giving the wrong message when we keep on talking about these free handouts.
Okay. Thanks, Joe. Are we too reluctant in Minnesota to boost tuition, make sure that the schools have enough money to work with?
I think that's okay. I think Joe does make a good point. Most people do work. Most people take out loans, or they're working while they go to school and pay it off. The university in Minsky still, I believe, is the best buy in town. It's proven once you get that degree, the earning power is tremendous. And I also look back to when young people don't even bat an eye to go get a loan for a new car, nor should they bat an eye to go get a college education, because it will enhance their earning power by hundreds of thousands over their lifetime. So Joe's right. He's got a good point, and people do continue to work while they go to Minsky or the university or private college, as far as that goes. And they make that choice what campus works for them, and they pay off their debts. And we still have a good loan program available, and then financial aid for those who are really in need.
Mm-hmm. So should we worry less about tuition increases? And
I think we have to be concerned about it, because it does become a problem, particularly for those students who would like to go on to graduate school. Not all professions are high-paying, and it can take them a very long time. They can make a decision on whether they go into teaching or nursing or whatever it is, some other field that may not be terribly high-paying, but is certainly a social need, and we want to encourage students to do that. And if they are going on beyond their baccalaureate degree, that adds onto the loan.
There's also a fine line of being competitive, because we've got a lot of our population close to Wisconsin and North Dakota. You look at, if we're out of line, those students are going to go somewhere else. And that competition also comes into play.
We're talking this hour about the higher education bill that is awaiting final passage by the Minnesota legislature. Unlike the other working groups or conference committees, the higher ed folks have come to an agreement on their bill. Matter of fact, they reached agreement last week, and the two key legislators involved in those negotiations, State Representative Peggy Lepick and State Senator Deanna Weiner, have joined us this hour to talk about what's in that bill and what lies ahead for higher education in the state of Minnesota. Love to have you join our conversation. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. And we'll get to more of your questions in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com. Minnesota Public Radio listeners are proud of their communities, schools, and homes. They care about where they live and improving their environment. Are these listeners your customers? They should be. Sponsor programming on NPR. Call Sarah at 651-290-1249.
By the way, Minnesota Public Radio is made possible by the generous financial support of listeners like you. We'd like to thank you for your support. Also, we'd like to introduce Greta Cunningham, who joins us now with some headlines. Greta.
Thanks, Gary, and good morning. The spiritual leader of Hamas says the Palestinian people will not kneel down, nor will they surrender, despite Yasser Arafat's call for a ceasefire. The Hamas leader says the militant group will continue fighting Israel. Hamas's support of the ceasefire is seen as vital to its success. Despite calls for a ceasefire, there was more violence today, with several Palestinians hurt in the West Bank. OPEC members have informally agreed to leave their production targets unchanged, but the Iranian oil minister says they'll meet again next month to see whether further fine-tuning is needed. That's because Iraq has suspended most of its oil exports. Iran's oil minister spoke after an informal two-hour meeting in Vienna of delegates from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. He said the group agreed to meet again on July 3rd to review market conditions as a result of Iraq's decision to halt its daily oil exports. The ailing U.S. steel industry is apparently in line for some help from the Bush administration. An Ohio congressman says administrative officials are telling him that the government will bring a case before the U.S. International Trade Commission. That's a government agency that must give its approval for import limits. The case would apparently impose sharp restrictions on the amount of steel imported from abroad. In regional news, nurses at two Twin Cities hospitals are still waiting to hear if they'll be joining other nurses on the picket line. Nurses at Abbott Northwestern Hospital and the Phillips Eye Institute in Minneapolis had demanded recounts of their votes ratifying new contract agreements. After four recounts, the vote tally remained in doubt. The Minnesota Nurses Association announced that recounts had affirmed votes by nurses to ratify contracts at United Hospital in St. Paul and Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids. Nurses are in the third day of their strike against Fairview Southdale in Edina and Riverside Campus of Fairview University Medical Center in Minneapolis. Fairview officials say the hospitals are operating normally with replacement nurses. The forecast for Minnesota calls for sunshine in the northeast with mostly cloudy skies elsewhere. Occasional showers are possible from the northwest to the southeast. High temperatures today ranging from 55 to 65 degrees. Right now in Rochester, report of light rain, a temperature of 50. It's cloudy in Duluth and 55. And in the Twin Cities, cloudy skies with a temperature of 53. Gary, that's a check on the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. It's 26 minutes before 12 o'clock. Midday is coming to you here on Minnesota Public Radio. And our guests this hour, State DFL Senator Deanna Weiner from Eagan and State Republican Representative Peggy Lepick from Golden Valley. They are the chairs of the Senate and House Higher Education Committees, respectively. They have worked out the details of the higher education bill that will become law just as soon as legislators are called back into special session. No word on some of those other bills, but this particular piece of legislation was worked out last week. They've been good enough to come by today to give us an idea of what's in that bill, what it means for higher education here in Minnesota. And again, if you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Hans, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to advocate, I guess, the opposite as a earlier caller, I think his name was Joe. You know, we all had it tougher than our kids did, and, you know, Joe worked while he went to school, and I worked a full-time job while I went to school, and, you know, our grandparents, you know, had to walk 3 miles in the snow uphill both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got to come to a realization at some point that as our expectations as a society for a higher, more educated, you know, group of people coming up behind us, we're exporting a lot of our manufacturing, less, brain-intensive jobs, You know, the young people are going to need to be educated, and I'm almost advocating the opposite way, that after your 12 years of you know, initial education, your K through 12, that we expect our kids to go at least another 2 years. And by expecting that, we've got to lay out the money so they can do it. I mean,
okay, let's get some comment. What about taking an entirely different approach to higher education here? And that is kind of go back to the future. Hey, you know, we need you need to go to school for a couple more years beyond high school, and we basically will pick up the tab.
Actually, that has been a issue that's been discussed before in committee. I think it maybe even has come forward as a bill in the past that would cover the first year at least of post-secondary education, make it free. And it's true that post-secondary education is no longer the option really that it used to be, when it used to be that you graduated from high school and you could get a pretty darn good job based on that high school diploma. And that really isn't the case anymore. It's the unusual person who I think can step out of high school and into a good job. They need to get some kind of post-secondary training, whether it's technical training or whether it's a four-year degree, whatever combination of things it may be, or even people coming and recycling after they've gotten a baccalaureate, as Deanna said earlier, to come back and get a technical degree or certificate. Post-secondary education is no longer really the option. People are expected to have that higher education, and I think that is a worthwhile discussion to have, whether because it is now really almost mandatory, should we be covering at least 1 year of that as almost part of our K-12 education rather than higher education?
I think is worthy of the discussion. The reality is we probably couldn't afford it today based on the budgets that we've put forward. So if we did offer this for free that first year, we'd have a tremendous amount of commitment of state dollars to make that happen. I wouldn't be afraid to look at it. I believe the value that higher ed gives us in return is immense, and it grows and grows, and it helps keep our economy growing. So with that, I think Hans makes a good point, but then we have to ask the reality question: do we have the fortitude to not have taxes reduced? Do we have the fortitude to say no to surplus rebates and say we're going to put that money into higher ed because we want to put it in that first year? So it would be a real reverse on having that first year for free. I do want to call Hans's attention to, and I'm not, well, I guess I could say I'm old, but I'm not that old. But back when I graduated from high school, St. Paul High School, the technical college was free. There were people that went on to technical trades and got a free education through the St. Paul VOTEC. It worked. It had all that resource of good labor jobs that are in the market. My fear is right now we're going to have all those folks retiring. We've had such an emphasis on people getting that four-year degree. We're going to have so many opportunities in those two-year technical degrees that anytime I meet young people, I say, have you considered going over to the technical college, because you can go right out of the gate and get a pretty doggone good paying job. And Minsky, to their credit, are looking at applied degrees where you can have that two-year and then transfer that over to a four-year institution, and two more years, you've got a four-year degree.
Oturo, your comment, please.
Hi, thanks for having me on the program.
You bet.
I'm a graduate from outside of the country, and I'm listening to this program, and I'm hearing that we want to increase tuition. Obviously, if you increase tuition, you're cutting out the people who are unable to take the current tuition. And talking about training, when you have a higher education like this, you're looking at costly amounts of money put into it. You're looking at training a teacher. You're looking at a four-year degree and a two-year master's program just to be a teacher. And you know the total amount that would be was going to be probably $40,000. And when we come out of college and we want to look for a job, what do we start with? You know, so if you're thinking about increasing cost of having higher education in this place, then obviously we have to increase what the incentive is when they come out. And so I think that should be addressed too.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. I'm wondering, now, Representative, you mentioned earlier that over time the things that the state of Minnesota needs to address, health care and the rest, have changed. And as a consequence, higher education as a percentage of state spending has gone down, so on and so forth. Do you believe that the public as a whole is still as interested in higher education spending as it once was? Has there been a philosophical change as well, or is this just a matter of dollars and cents?
I think it's just a matter of dollars and cents. I think people are very aware of the need for higher education. I think in Minnesota we have a long tradition of excellent higher education and a lot of pride in the systems that we have. People want to maintain it, but I think that it is perhaps people are not aware of the competition for state dollars that has increased. And it's not easy to maintain the kind of excellence in higher education that we've always been used to when we have an expanded system with much greater demands on it and other areas such as healthcare that people are saying have to be a high priority for us as well.
Are you folks confident that the money we're currently spending on higher education is being well spent? Each time we do one of these programs, if President Udoff is here or Chancellor Anderson, whoever, inevitably there are two or three calls saying, gosh, I work at the U, or I do this, or I know this. And it's all this huge amount of money wasted over there.
I don't feel there. I think they made a very strong case to our division that they're using our state resources wisely. They've proven that they've reallocated, they've made the cuts, and they'll continue to make the cuts. They'll certainly operate on whatever budget we give them. And I don't know how you felt about that, Peggy, but I felt that they did do a fine job explaining their budgets to us.
I think they did. And I think one of the things that we learned this year that we were not aware of is how the university has changed its reallocation and prioritizing methodology, I guess you could say. Since President Udoff has been there, they have really changed how they distribute money among the colleges and the departments. And in the way that they have set it up now, it really strongly reinforces the priorities of the university. I think it's very important that they have very clear priorities of the areas where they feel that we need to be very strong and put resources in, and that they are able to shift money around to reinforce those priorities.
Mm-hmm. Each college and the university has their own compact with their own set of criteria and accountability measures that they have to approve. And if they're not making it, they're not going to get the same amount of dollars in that college. And
so the governor, in your estimation, was way off base here when he, through the course of the legislative session, kept saying, you know, I want to see where that money's going, being spent. I can't believe that that there isn't waste in a budget that large.
I think he did recognize that. I mean, when we went to his office on Friday after we wrapped the bill up, I believe he stated that he was going to sign the bill. I mean, he didn't come out and say, yes, I'm going to sign it, but I got the strong signal, or we got the strong signal, he will be signing this bill into law. I'd like to just let you know what happened, Gary. On one of our conference committees, we had Steve Bosacker come before us and talk about the need for a higher ed, whether you call it a director, someone that will be at the table representing higher ed. That is a big void, and they've admitted this. The governor's office has admitted this. There was nobody speaking for higher ed when he put this budget together. They certainly called in the U. They called in Minsku. They've heard from students, but they had nobody advocating for higher ed and what the costs of higher ed are. And I think just the fact that Steve Bosacker came before us and wants to explore ideas on how they can have better representation at that table, to me, sends a signal that the numbers were low, and then when he signs this bill, they certainly recognize that void.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very fair for the governor and the legislature to ask how state dollars are being spent, and we have done that, and we continue to do that. We always call in the university in Minsku and ask them, how are you spending the money? Let's see what you've accomplished with this. The question is, are they accomplishing the goals that they have set out and that we have asked them to accomplish? And I think that's where we need to ask for accountability. I think in university systems, higher education, like any human institution, is going to have some waste. It is simply not possible that there will be no waste anywhere. But is what they are doing on track? Are they accomplishing what we have asked them to do and what they say they need to do? And that's what we'll be tracking.
Helen, your question, comment, please.
Yes, I too wanted to address Joe's comments. From the sound of his voice, I think he's probably someone 50 or older, and I know that when I went to college, I too worked, and that was not that difficult. I have taught college since then, as has my husband, and I know that it is much more difficult today than it was when I went to school because costs have risen disproportionately. I've had students working two and three jobs. They come to class and they're ready to fall asleep in order to put themselves through school, and it takes them maybe 6 or 8 years to get a four-year degree, whereas I could work and get a four-year degree in about 4 years when I went.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the comment, Helen.
You're welcome.
What about the governor's idea that what we really ought to do long-term is significantly increase the aid that's made available to students and let the schools essentially compete for those students? So a student could take his, $10,000, $15,000 and pick a school that fits him, and if enough students go to that school, then the school will prosper, and if not enough students go to that school, then that school's going to be in trouble.
I think it works only so far. These are public institutions, and we have to make sure that we maintain the quality in them. I think certainly, yes, the students are where the students flow is going to make a difference, and I think in the new Minsky allocation formula, how they distribute out to the campuses the state dollars, that is where the students go is going to make a critical difference. And if the campuses are falling in enrollment and can't justify the dollars that they're getting, they're going to dry up, and pretty soon those campuses are going to be in jeopardy. But I think that basically whether it should be high tuition, high aid, or low tuition less aid, the course that we should follow has been a matter of discussion for many years, particularly between the House and the Senate. And it's a fair discussion to have. But in Minnesota, we have a history of saying we want to have access, real access. And generally speaking, that means low tuition. And we have among the highest tuition or financial aid, the most generous financial aid programs
in the country.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think that we need to feel apologetic at all about what we're doing in terms of financial aid. We have put in, I think it was something like $36 million into financial aid this year, and we've addressed some of the issues that students have been asking us to deal with for a long time. We finally did it this year, and that will be of enormous assistance to students.
We rejected that in our Senate division on giving the money to the students entirely. We do have an obligation. We have to fund Minsky. We have to fund the university. I think it would be a tragedy to have a student have a pack of dollars and say, now I'm going to shop, but, oh, I'm not going to stop at Minsky or the university because they don't have the quality programming and the professors that are there to able to give me the kind of education I expect. I would also like to remind members that financial aid is also available for people that choose to go to private colleges. So in essence, right now a student, if they're eligible, can get those financial aid dollars and go shopping with them, and they can choose what best fits their needs right now.
Right. And then the private colleges as well, they have their own resources to assist students with financial aid in addition to our state grant program.
Mm-hmm. Steve, a quick question before we wrap up.
I just wanted to say that I run a small business, and I have some young people working for me, and some of them are delaying their high school graduation and taking classes at the university and accruing credits. And it just seems like a great idea for me. For somebody who's ambitious, they can do this, and I think they should open that up, advertise it, make sure everybody's aware of it, and maybe reprioritize and transfer dollars and invest them in these younger students rather than investing them in importing a professor from Princeton who might or may not reinvent gene therapy. I think if we're going to gamble with our money, we should gamble it on the people from here and invest it in these 18, 19-year-old kids.
Okay.
I think what Steve is talking about is the post-secondary education options program where high school students can take courses at any post-secondary institution, a public institution here in Minnesota, and it is essentially paid for. It is a tremendous bargain, and those students who think ahead or who are prepared to do that can really benefit financially as well as educationally enormously.
I didn't know you could delay your graduation, though, from high school.
I'm not quite sure how you can do that.
Boy,
if that doesn't just so exemplify the workforce problem. We have Steve as a business owner that is out there recruiting probably young high school students to come work for him. And if he's still on the line, I'd like to hear his response. But he's working with high school students, and they're obviously smart enough to know that post-secondary education opportunities are giving them some college credit while they're still in high school, which is a great bargain, and it is in place in every single school district.
We have to get to the bottom of that, though, whether, and I always thought you could go to these colleges for free while you were in high school, and then you graduate.
Right.
I didn't know you could.
I didn't know either.
I'm not quite sure. I think I've heard of that being done, but I'm not quite sure how it works. I'll have to find out more about it.
Yeah, and I think this really, I think, shows that the business community does need to step up a little bit more to the plate about higher ed, because they need these workers. They need educated, trained workers, and the more we have them sitting at the table, the better.
A couple of quick questions before we quit here. Number one, there was a lot of talk about perhaps charging K-12 schools, high schools, if some of their students end up in a Minnesota public college and it turns out they have to take remedial classes. I understand you have a pilot project of sort included in this bill?
We do. We've got developmental education demonstration project. The Senate had it going statewide. There were some concerns from not only the K-12 systems, but the Minscu systems. And what the amendment that is now part of this bill is a demonstration project which, with the goal to increase the number of high school graduates who are academically prepared to enroll in college-level courses. It will take, Minscu will choose one campus and then contract with four high schools in an area and then have a look back at, get the baseline data, find out how prepared they are, administer the college-level tests while they are juniors in high school, and then find out when they come to that door, are they prepared to meet the rigor of a higher ed program? And if not, they'll charge back to their high school.
Mm-hmm. Always tough to generalize, but in general, would you say that particular problem is the result of poor training in the high schools or the colleges letting too many kids in who shouldn't be going to college?
Well, there are colleges, except for the university and the state university, are all open access. Students can go in as long as they have a high school diploma. So I think the issue is, are students coming out of high school adequately prepared to start college? And I think especially with the assessments that are now being done at the 8th grade level and again, I think, 10th or 11th grade level in order to graduate, that is going to, over the long run, really make quite a difference in how well prepared these students are. We have really changed our requirements for students to graduate and how many courses, particularly in math, need to take.
And CFL, I believe, needs to work closer with our higher ed institutions. One of the saddest stories I heard is you have a student that had an A-plus all through their high school years. They got to college, they needed every single area of remedial education. So I think this just emphasizes the need for strong grad standards, higher expectations that we can get out of our K-12 schools. And the K-12 schools should be working with higher ed to know what is the expectation when you go to college. Should we say no to them when they go to community college? I don't believe so. I still think that access should be there. But how we're going to have and who's going to be responsible and pay for that is the question.
All right, we're out of time here, but you folks got your work done. When is there going to be a special session? When is this going to happen?
I think we better go over and help those boys out. No, Monday maybe.
I don't know. I hope it's soon.
Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. We've been talking today with Republican State Representative Peggy Lepik from Golden Valley and DFL State Senator Deanna Weiner from Eagan. They are the chairs of the House and Senate Higher Education Committees, respectively. They have worked out the details of the higher education bill, a bill which provides substantially more money than the governor had requested for higher education, substantially less than the institutions had asked for. But it looks like that bill is going to become law. They were good enough to stop by today to talk about what's in the law. Thanks to all of you who've been with us this hour, especially those of you who called in or tried to call in with your questions and comments.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 5th of June, 2001. It's the birthday of the writer of thrillers, Ken Follett, in Wales, 1949 on this day, who wrote 10 novels before he wrote his big bestseller, The Eye of the Needle. It's the birthday of one of Britain's leading playwrights, David Hare, born in St. Leonard, Sussex, England, 1947. He was an actor in a traveling theater group called the Portable Theater when a playwright failed to deliver a play. There were just 4 days left before the scheduled performance. There was no play, so David Hare sat down and wrote a piece of satire, which went well enough that he was commissioned to write another. And that play, Slag, won him an award for the most promising new playwright in Britain in 1970. He's written many plays since then, plenty in 1978. His State of the Nation trilogy, Racing Demon, Murmuring Judges, The Absence of War in the early 90s, Skylight, Amy's View, The Judas Kiss, and others. David Hare, who said, "My first rule of playwriting is that scenes must be rivers, not lakes. They must go somewhere." It's the birthday of the novelist Margaret Drabble, born in Sheffield in 1939, who's written 15 novels, plays, short stories, the editor of the Oxford Companion to English Literature. Her most recent novel, The Peppered Moth, came out this year. It's the birthday of the television journalist and author Bill Moyers, born Billy Don Moyers in Hugo, Oklahoma, in 1934. He was a reporter. He was an assistant to President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And then in 1970, he hopped on a bus and began a 13,000-mile trip across the country interviewing people, which became his first book, Listening to America. Bill Moyers, who said, "It took me a while after the White House to learn that what's important in journalism is not how close you are to power, but how close you are to reality." It's the birthday of poet and playwright Federico Garcia Lorca, born in Fuente Vaquero, Spain, 1898, known for his poems, his trilogy of plays in the 30s, before he was assassinated by the fascists at the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War. And it was on this day in 1851, Harriet Beecher Stowe's novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, or Life Among the Lowly, began to appear in serial form in an abolitionist weekly newspaper, the Washington National Era. Here's a poem for today by Floyd Skloot, Swans in Galway Bay. Seven pairs of swans preen this morning near the docks. We walk down together, searching among the rocks for a perfect feather to commemorate the scene. The swans float, one foot still tucked underneath a wing, the other held steady as a rudder. They seem both unconcerned and ready for whatever the day will bring them as they drift past. Soon they are swept away in pairs where the River Corrib surges into Galway Bay. From here, just a sliver of jagged slate-blue glass, but fierce enough to spin them sideways toward the sea. Paired still, they carry on their slow ceremonies, adjusting with utter calm to the currents they move in. Content, it would appear, to end up wherever they find themselves, as long as they are together, each feather where it belongs, each mate with a clear line of sight to the other. We have come to the dock's end empty-handed. I turn back, but she stops to watch, holding me there as one small feather drifts to shore. A poem by Floyd Skloot, Swans in Galway Bay, from The Evening Light, published by Storyline Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Technical direction by Mitch Hanley. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. Regional broadcast of the Writer's